Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Are you ready?
Hey, guys. Come on. Bring it in. Welcome back to the podcast dedicated to the most precious human pastime. I sit down with friends, idols, and inspirations of mine to shoot the breeze about music, life, whatever. I'm Gregory Porter, and this is The Hang.
If I had seen someone on TV or on a magazine cover that looked like me, maybe I wouldn't have felt as alone in high school, because I was like, oh, I exist.
On this episode, we welcome one of India's truly global superstars.
You know, the judgment on the work is not the judgment on me. I spend a year making a movie, and then somebody in 2 minutes is like, ah, that was terrible.
An actress, producer, singer, activist, author of a recent memoir. In fact, I'm very happy that she's managed to carve out time to hang out with us. Let's meet Priyanka Chopra Jonas.
Man, what is this space you are in?
Well, you have a beautiful fireplace behind you, too.
Well, I only lit my fire.
Because you saw mine?
I saw you in an interview with this gorgeous fire behind you, and I was like, okay, I can do the same. Priyanka Chopra Jonas, how are you?
I'm very good, Gregory. How are you?
I am good. I feel very lucky, very honored to talk with you. You're a busy woman.
I try to be.
You know what?
This is a tough time to be busy.
It is. But you know what I was going to say? Generally, I'm never at home. Which is the reason why I have my fire lit, because I'm at home and I really like to create that homely vibe when I'm at home. When I cook, I like the smells to waft all over the house and the feeling of really being at home. So What I was thinking is, as we have slowed down and been caused to consider sometimes even our very existence, our families, what is most important to us? Have you done that for yourself? People always say, what are the top five most important things to you? Have you, in a way, made a list of the things that are most important to you since we've been in this pandemic?
I think I do actually play this game with my family or my friends, especially when I'm having a tough day, which I think is so easy to have almost every day, being stuck at home in a world that's sort of stuck in flux. Mm-hmm. I call someone, whoever I'm speaking to, and I ask them to count down five things that they're grateful for today, including myself, in this moment, right? So, Gregory, what are the five things you're grateful for in this moment? And for me, that would be being able to have this conversation with you, even though we can't be sitting in the same room together, but, you know, we have technology to be able to do it. I'm very grateful for that. I'm grateful to be safe and healthy. I am grateful that my family is safe and healthy. I am grateful going to work at a time when a lot of people are not. And I'm grateful that I have a sense of peace with myself at this point and I'm not feeling anxious. And, you know, just doing these five things whenever I'm feeling crazy just makes me feel, and every day it's different.
Yeah.
It just makes me take stock of where I am, what I'm feeling, and not worry about what I don't have.
Yeah. Normally my travel is 250 shows a year. And I had gotten used to that crazy schedule. And being in one place, initially, being in lockdown, it was a pleasure initially. But then I was like, okay, what next? What next? And so our minds, our bodies, our hearts, even our relationships have to adjust. For me, you know, if I was in an interview and you were asking me that question, the gift of love. I have a 7-year-old son, my wife, Victoria, my family members, my brothers and sister. I have one brother that I lost from COVID early in the pandemic. And music, because in music, for me, there's so many things that are connected to that. Family. My mother is deeply, deeply in my craft. And I was reading some of your book, an excerpt from your book, and realizing how, I think, important your parents are in the foundation of who you are, obviously. But I think probably something that they gave you probably sticks with you in your career. Do you feel like there are some morals, standards, gifts, thoughts, or things that they've given to you that you put into your craft?
Oh my gosh, definitely. I think my parents were so instrumental in who I am today. And their upbringing of me was so instrumental because I was always raised as a thinking child. I was always given credence to my opinions. My dad was extremely creative. You know, every morning we would wake up with music. My mom loved music too. I had an influence of Hindi music from my dad and Western music from my mom. And my dad loved to sing. He used to do stage shows. I think at that time he was told that, you know, he couldn't have a profession in music and he became a surgeon. But music was always his first love. And,
I love the way you just
casually.
Yeah, he couldn't be a singer, so he became. Yeah, I was thinking about being an astronaut, but, you know.
No, I'll tell you something about Indian people. At least in that generation, there were three options: doctor, engineer, lawyer. If you want a job, those are the three jobs that were available. Most of my family is the three of those.
That's awesome.
We started bifurcating only after the next generation. I think the gift of creativity is definitely something that I got from my parents, and the sense of duty, mm-hmm. work ethic, you know, discipline. Both my parents were in the army, military, and having a sense of, you know, this sense of duty, basically, that when you take on something, your word is your bond. It must mean something.
Yeah.
You know, if you agree to something, that's your job. Like, I think those are two things that I really bring into my career every single day. Mm-hmm. I really think that has defined me.
Mm-hmm. You grew up in India.
And in the U.S.
Uh-huh.
I was in India till I was 12 years old, and then I was in the States till I was about 16, 17. And then I went back to India again for about 10 years and then moved to the States again for about 10 years. I literally live in both countries.
Uh-huh. But you must feel like, now with your career, you must feel like a citizen of the world, really.
I have felt like that for a while now. And I know this part of the world is probably just getting to know me, but I've had an almost 20-year career in entertainment now. And within that, I've had the good fortune of just living all over the world. At the moment, I'm living in London because I'm filming a movie and a TV show. And I think that was another thing that I've learned from my military parents was to be able to adjust to new surroundings, to be able to think of them as a sense of adventure instead of, being fearful of getting out of what I'm comfortable or what I'm used to, you know. Mm-hmm. Routines change, environments change, people change. But I think I brought my sense of curiosity from my parents, you know, mm-hmm. always wanting to go to a new place. And that was a lot of my childhood was about that.
Mm. I listened to your voice first of all, your speaking voice, very beautiful. You could have worked just with that when you wanted to.
But
there's a richness in your voice that makes me just want to just give you a song and like, girl, let me hear you sing this slow ballad. Which says, so I looked up and I found some of the music that you worked on, but they were a couple that were the fast songs. And I was like,
oh, pop songs.
Yeah, it was a pop song, which is cool. Hey, I love it. I love it all. But I wanted to just give you a ballad, one of those slow, silky ballads, because you have such a rich tone in your speaking voice.
Well, I was signed to Interscope Records when I did that music. And I just, I have sung ballads, but they're sitting on my computer somewhere. I didn't end up releasing them because I pivoted out of music and started, doing acting a little bit more. But, it's something it's unfinished business for me.
Yeah. it's still in there.
Yeah.
Maybe someday.
Yeah. Never say never. I mean, music is such a large part of my life. I wake up, the first thing in the morning I do is as soon as I'm awake, I grab my cup of coffee, which is besides my bed, and I put on some music. I have music on all day. When I'm reading scripts, I have music on. When I'm having dinner, I have music on. Mm-hmm. And it's dictated by how I'm feeling. So it's such a large part of my life that it would be fun to dabble in it again.
All different types of music?
Yeah. I go from jazz sometimes to, pop music in the morning when I'm like having a shower. It's like, I listen to like lo-fi, or piano or like just instrumental music when I'm reading because words confuse me. Hindi music, 90s music because I'm a 90s kid. I'm really moody about the music, but it's just, I love every kind of it because every kind of music gives you a different feeling. It's so magical.
Mm. You mentioned with your parents, again, many times on The Hang, I'm going back to the foundation of what makes you, you. Because I feel like in many ways, I'm reliving parts of my childhood in my music, trying to sometimes correct some ills or some mistakes or some things that have happened in my childhood or in my youth. I'm constantly considering my childhood. And when I look at your work, I'm wondering, in introducing yourself to an American or a Western audience, in presenting yourself in interviews, in speaking about the things that you care about in feminism, women's rights, or the rights of people, poor, the underdog, children, do you feel like you're representing yourself as a brown-skinned woman? Do you feel like you're carrying with you your people or your family with you when you are in Hollywood or any place now?
I do think so. I think I wasn't as aware that I needed to do that till I started, a couple of times when I was in high school in America, I was one of the very few Indian kids in my school. I felt, different. I was never as aware of my ethnicity as I was when I was in high school in the States, just by the fact that I, was different. And I was one of few kids in my high school at that point. But afterwards, when I came back to Hollywood, and this is 10 years ago, or 6-7 years ago, and I started seeking work here, the lack of representation of a brown person and the lack of the, even consideration that there is a lack of representation, that when you think of mainstream entertainment in Hollywood, you don't see a leading man or a leading lady who is brown. Even though when you look around you in America itself, there's a lot of Indian people who are a part of the American population. And we're 1/5 of the world's population and consume a tremendous amount of English language entertainment. But you don't see that. Yeah. So when I came into Hollywood and I started seeking work here, that's when I started feeling it the most. And I think, I remember when CAA, which is a talent agency, signed me for the first time, the headline in one of the trade magazines was, CAA signs its very first Bollywood star. It didn't even have my name in the headline. You know, so I was like, okay, I'm really carrying my people.
Right.
When right. I'm just a girl looking for a job, honestly.
You're carrying about 2 billion people on your back, right? Yeah, yeah.
But it comes from lack of opportunity. I mean, it comes from lack of representation. We keep saying this word and it becomes trite, but like if you really think about what that means is, and how important it might have been for, you know, my younger self in high school at 15, if I had seen someone on TV or, you know, on a magazine cover that looked like me, maybe I wouldn't have felt as alone in high school, you know, because mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I exist. I'm seen.
What is it that was driving you after having such a great career in Bollywood to continue with a career in Hollywood?
It's funny you ask that question because actually it was not something I pursued. I had this amazing opportunity to come to America to make music, not to work in Hollywood, which is not something I'd even done in India. I always sang. I loved singing. Like I told you, you know, music, I've grown up in a very musical home. I loved it, but I'd never done it professionally. And here I was given this opportunity to work with Jimmy Iovine, Interscope Records. And I'm just someone who likes to do new things and different things. So I stepped onto that boat just to see if I could creatively push myself into a different avenue. And I feel like that was sort of destiny taking me across the shores. And when I got into America and I was making music for about 4 or 5 years, I started meeting people within Hollywood and I started, you know, going to the same parties. Music and movies are so sort of combined in the Hollywood scheme of things. And a lot of people started telling me that I should probably, you know, work within the acting thing here as well. And I got curious about growth and evolution. I'm still doing Hindi films. I haven't done one for a couple of years, 2 years now, but I still do Hindi movies and it's, you know, it's what's taught me everything that I am. When I walk onto a set anywhere in the world, it's because I've learned from Indian movies and I have the confidence that I know my job. Mm. And I think it was that confidence that allowed me to try all over again because I knew that I knew my job. I just wanted the opportunities, which I didn't really see that existed. I wanted to be part of mainstream Hollywood. I didn't want to be a check in the box. I didn't want to, you know, just be a character that sort of was a diversity hire. But, you know, I wanted to lead shows. And when that opportunity came to me by ABC Studios, they signed me for a talent deal and asked me the kind of work that I wanted to do. And I said, I don't want to be stereotyped into, you know, how you usually see brown people in entertainment. And to their credit, they gave me, I auditioned for 3 or 4 shows, which I'd loved. But the show I ended up doing was called Quantico, and I played an Indian-American FBI agent, which had nothing to do with
right.
anything. It was just a story. And I, as an artist, just wanted to be a story without, you know, my ethnicity should be my asset. It shouldn't be my definition. And to me, that's what drove me. And that became sort of a quest. I want to push the envelope to start doing that. It's too far and few in between. I want to bring a consistency, an opportunity, which as a producer now, I have the ability to do. I have a first look deal with Amazon. You know, like with the White Tiger, I'm creating a lot of movies and TV shows that are representative of South Asians and South Asian culture and of women, you know, in leading parts in mainstream entertainment. So I'm very, very excited about sort of this new pivot of my artistic expression, which is to be able to put content out there that I, you know, saw a gap in when I started, when I joined, or when I was seeking work in Hollywood.
Is White Tigers your first time producing?
In America. It's my second time in America. I did another movie, which was a horror movie with Blumhouse called Evil Eye. Mm-hmm. And otherwise, my production company is about 8 years old. We've made about 12 movies in India. Uh-huh. And now just about moved here and are continuing that process in English language entertainment.
Well, that's kind of a pretty big hit for your...
Right? Second one.
Yeah. Very nice. Very cool. Because when I watched White Tigers, I was curious as to if they're... First of all, amazing, amazing movie.
Thank you.
Was it made for Hollywood?
Yes, it was an English language adaptation. I mean, it's an English language book, so it was an English language movie. But we tried to be real with the world. Mm-hmm. So we have a little bit of Hindi, but it's made for, in terms of language, it's adapted from a novel, which was a Man Booker Prize winning novel in 2008. Mm-hmm. And it was New York Times bestseller and stuff. So it's sort of adapted from that. And our director, the novel was dedicated to him. Mm-hmm. So he knows the world really well.
Your character in particular, coming from the West and then being in India and having these Western righteousness about what is right and what is wrong, stratifications of people's lives and what they can do and the rights that they have. I love the way that the script and the way that you guys played with that, because it was really, it was profound. And I wondered if that story, that script, has any relationship to your life as an Indian woman coming, or Indian, maybe I can say child, coming into Western life?
Two very crucial questions in there. But first of all, thank you for identifying that, because I loved that about the movie and I loved that about the novel, is the gray of humanity. And especially with my character, with her going back, to India and then having a moralistic stand to this guy who was stuck in the vortex of poverty. And she goes to him, I pulled myself out. My parents worked in a bodega. You need to, what do you want? As if it was that easy. As if he didn't want this all his life. But, you know, it's chastising him for something he has no control over. And I loved playing that, because as an Indian, I know the reality. I don't come from that perspective, which is a little bit Western. You're absolutely right. And second of all, the humanity of this character, that she's moralistically right till it's convenient, right? As soon as it wasn't convenient, she stood back. She was like, okay, right. I'm not a good person anymore. Like,
Which was so cold-blooded. First of all, the lead, if you were, you kicked some righteous ass in the movie. The lead actor.
Adarsh. His name is Adarsh Gaurav.
Adarsh. And I apologize for not memorizing his name. But damn. Don't you love it when you come into something that is, you know, even if this, the reason why I asked if this movie was made for Hollywood, because it seems like he didn't give a damn about Hollywood. He's almost acting. You guys are almost acting like it's a documentary. It's so real in a way. His facial expressions, the way, you know, the politician, the way she spat on the table, the way it was just like, just really so like real and raw and truthful. The human stories in the movie were really so truthful. And I found myself at the end of the movie saying, being okay with a little crime, you know?
You know? Yeah.
I was like,
I mean, and the point of the movie really is to have this debate.
Right.
To say how right is right and how far do you go, and like questioning all of those things.
Yeah. The moral question that brings in thinking about my relatives, in thinking about people who are suffering under some type of oppression today, is a deep, deep question. I'm not a violent person, and I want things to be resolved in righteous ways, which is why I love the gifts that we have, the ability to change people's hearts with our words, with the things that we write down on paper. This is such a beautiful gift, because sometimes we can affect thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people's minds and hearts in a beautiful way, even beyond politics. But the idea that the least one, the powerless one, the ones with little voices, the ones that have been diminished, empowering those people is something that my mother gave to me, and something that I can't make a record without putting something about those people in the music. And so I was wondering, in your choosing to do certain projects, in the projects that you are working on, is it something that you think about? Your career can be a help?
Absolutely. I think, you know, the fact that we're public people, first of all, gives us an influence. And, you know, second of all, being creative people, that's our ammunition to be able to amplify, you know, whatever we can. We're not policymakers. We're not lawmakers. We can't change circumstances, but we can definitely change minds and influence thoughts. And I think, you know, as the producer of, I'm an executive producer of The White Tiger as well. As a producer, for me, that was something that I was so proud of, is to be able to create sort of a conversation, which is a very universal theme with this movie, which is the class divide that we live with. And especially in 2020, we've been able to see that a lot more, right? The haves and the have-nots. And I think we as a world, just a privileged world, have become so desensitized to a vast majority of the world, right? Like, when is the last time you've driven past a homeless shelter and not looked at, you know, someone? Or it's just the world we've started living in. And I feel like, as a producer, as a creative person, I enjoyed the fact that I could be part of storytelling that is a mirror to society, including myself. And that's what I can do, right? Is provoke thoughts, provoke conversation, provoke debate. And it seemed like this novel definitely did that, but so did the movie. And that mm-hmm. makes me very proud mm. on so many levels. That as well as the fact that, you know, this was an all-Indian star cast. That was a number one movie on Netflix, which is the largest streaming platform in the world. That's historic too. So I was just very, very proud of it on many levels.
Yeah. Isn't it the proudest thing for me is that I've had the opportunity to sell, you know, or for people to listen to, millions of people to listen to the music that comes out of me, that is for a good purpose, for a good cause, and has a good message in it. I love it when something goes viral, essentially when something becomes popular, but there's some goodness in it. There's what you believe, the gems of kindness and fairness, mutual respect is in the music. And that gets spread out to the world. I think if I would sing something that was, everybody loves just, you know, shake your booty music. When you go to the dance club, that's what you want, right? But if you can have something that is that can become popular and it'll have the core of who you are as a person, that is something that's really beautiful.
It really is. And it's so amazing to be able to be in a field that where we can do that.
Your book. Can you talk about the
Oh, that's my puppy, Diana. And
no, that's, it's actually cool. It's home. It's natural.
She already has an opinion, like her mama.
Hey, guys, you're listening to The Hang. Hit subscribe or follow on your podcast thingamajig of choice to get every episode of The Hang fresh off the presses.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Your memoir, your book.
It's a lot harder than you think when you're like, all right, I'm going to write the story of my life. It sounds interesting when you think about it, but when you have to actually put it down in a book, it's like, it takes you to places, and it takes you to places where maybe you weren't ready to go to, or places that you had shoved under the rug and not looked at for a really long time. And when when words come out, and you're a musician, you'll understand this, but when words come out of your mind and become something tangible,
yeah,
that's a very powerful thing. For me, it was very healing as a process. I've always been so curious about writing, whether it's music or whether it's, I've written op-eds and, but I've never written a book. I always wanted to, but putting those two things together, which is like actually being able to deal with the things that I probably was afraid of dealing with or thinking about, along with creating something which was interesting and sort of was my voice. And, directly as a public person, when I give interviews, it's always sort of adapted into, and, people, there's always a medium, but this was me, for me, directly in my voice. And I felt a sense of pride having finished that. And also I felt a sense of closure to a chapter sort of in my life. From my childhood to now, I'd been running so fast at such a fast pace for so many years that I didn't have time to stop and take stock and just think, appreciate, feel all the things that happened to me. And this book helped me do that.
Yeah. Writing and the ability to get what it is that you have in your heart onto paper, it's really a wonderful thing. And it's in some ways, many ways, it's art therapy. In reading just little bits of you and your relationship with your father, there was one point where you were talking about riding on his motorbike and these just sweet little moments that you had with your father. It brought me to tears because I wanted sweet little moments like that with my father. And I didn't have them. And my remedy and my healing for that has been a memoir of another kind, a melodic memoir, a song. And the very first time that mm-hmm. I considered myself a songwriter mm-hmm. was when I started to write songs about my father and that relationship, ultimately about love. And so the idea of putting down both your joys and your pains, I'm always drawn to something very powerful that happened in my childhood, whether it was a piece of music or a movie, something that, you know, that becomes like a, in a way, a benchmark in your life that made you see things differently. In a way, something where I saw myself in a piece of art. And so that's, you're like enormous on social media. And I don't know, I'm sure you don't get a chance to read all of the messages that come your way, but I bet there are, right, because I'm quite small compared to you, but you probably just get a cross section of what you hear about. And it's probably some very, very encouraging things that your fans have to say, because you're breaking down walls, opening up doors, turning on lights, and opening eyes. And it's a cool thing to see from my perspective. Yeah,
I really appreciate that, Gregory. I mean, listen, with the brickbats come the bouquets, you know, where there is good, there's bad as well. And social media is, it's that beast. You know, I love being able to access people who are interested in me, well-wishers, curiosity, having a sense of a direct conversation with people. I love social, but the negativity and the trolls and, I mean, all of that is crazy. So over the last few years, I think I came to a conclusion of, I have so much love and support, like you said, that I just stopped reading all the bad stuff mm-hmm. and just focused on creating a really positive relationship with people who are truly interested. And, you know, I just distanced myself a little bit from the negativity, and it's really helped me have a more positive sort of relationship with the internet.
Yes, it's interesting. When I come into a new market, there's always, you know, those first initial days can be like weird. You know, when there's a people who don't know you, mm-hmm. you have to start from the beginning. And it's always so strange because you had such, you know, enormous success, you know, over 50 movies in India. And then you come to the United States and you have to start all over and explain yourself again and why this is this and why this is that. So with me, so like we're going to start working you in the U.S. You have a lot of success internationally. And now I have to start all over again. Well, why do you wear that hat? Well, why do you sing with that? have to start all over again. And sometimes the initial questions can be when people can consume something that you've put into the world, whether it's pictures, music, movies, whatever it is in entertainment, they feel like they can take scissors and cut it up. And if you allow yourself to be that thing that you're giving to them, then they cut you up. So you have to be careful. You have to be careful and not allow yourself to be sliced and picked apart by the very thing that is a gift to you, you know? So it's a tricky thing now that we are extend ourselves so far into the world.
Look, it's never easy, right? Because our jobs literally are to create something and give it to somebody else to critique, like or not.
Right.
Right. That literally, we like literally get paid for it. That's like our job. So I spend a year making a movie and then somebody in 2 minutes is like, ah, that was terrible.
Right.
So very early on, I had to sort of make peace with the fact that, you know, the judgment on the work is not the judgment on me. And to differentiate, even though I leave a part of my soul in every artistic endeavor that I step into, but I realize that, you know, there are days I could be making something that people resonate with, and there are days I could be making something that people don't resonate with. Mm-hmm. But that's not a reflection of who I am. That's not a reflection of the person I am or my abilities. Because your abilities should be decided by what you do after failure, because failure will come, my friend, especially in our jobs. It will come. It's what do you do after it? Do you have the ability to dust yourself off and try something else again? Or are we going to be burdened by the failure that's inevitable in a creative field like ours, because people's opinions are different?
Yeah.
And we're in a subjective art, right? Like,
right.
It's subjective. Someone's going to like it. Someone's not going to like it.
Right.
We can't force our opinions upon them. Mm. So very early on, I kind of came to peace with the fact that these are two different things, and there will be times where people might not resonate with what I make, but I'm willing to try. I'm willing to learn. I'm willing to create something that actually touches people, you know, to be a student of life mm-hmm. and of the arts.
Mm-hmm. Mm. I think in my music and what people, how they connect with me is sometimes how I deal with self-doubt and insecurity in the music. I call it masculine vulnerability, but I have no idea exactly what that means. It's just simply vulnerability. It doesn't have a masculine or feminine edge to it. But how we see you as a bold, strong, capable, confident actor and performer now. But were there some moments in your life where self-doubt and insecurity crept in?
Of course it did. You know, as walled as someone is, even if you are, you know, walk out with confidence and it seems like this person is made of steel, everyone is human and everyone bleeds red. And, you know, I did too many times, and I still do. I still have days where, you know, it gets a lot and you're just trying to keep your head above water. I think the one thing that I didn't really know very well in my 20s that I kind of came to the conclusion that helped me in my 30s is that we don't always need to be confident. You know, you only need to use confidence when you need it. It's okay to be vulnerable, and it's okay to feel feelings and feel bad and, you know, cry and feel sad and, you know, finding someone you love and being able to rest your head on their shoulders and admit to the fact that, you know, you feel sad. It's okay to allow ourselves that. We don't always have to be, you know, tight and caught up, you know, with all our muscles really, really rigid. Just let it go. And I feel like it's so liberating to take the pressure that we put on ourselves when it comes to our emotions. And I think that's what sort of you meant by masculine vulnerability, is society puts those kind of pressures on men and women and on people that men shouldn't cry and men should be tough and men should not feel and, you know, and then you cry like a girl because girls cry. I mean, what are these labels that have been created? Everyone has a heart. Everyone is going to feel hurt. And we need to empower our society and our kids, in fact, to be okay with feeling, to be okay with vulnerability, because that's where confidence comes from. And I don't think a lot of people realize that. Confidence does not come from showing the world that you are unbeatable. Confidence comes from feeling inside of you that you're unbeatable. And that only happens with being able to deal with your vulnerabilities. Mm. Again, something I did not know in my 20s, only realized in my 30s that, oh, it does really come from inside and I don't need to always have it.
It's the one thing that I always am telling my nieces and nephews is to remember these moments of insecurity and unsureness. Because I tell them that it is something that's going to give you strength when you're older, and that's, I think it that speaks to just the words that you gave us, the words of wisdom that you just gave us. I really appreciate it. I have a cheeky and corny question for you that I already know the answer. I already know the answer
uh-oh,
to.
Uh-oh.
Are you related to Deepak Chopra?
No, but Never met him, have heard of him, but I've seen his books at airports.
No, but there's a funny thing because I worked for Deepak in San Diego after college. He had a center for well-being in La Jolla in San Diego. And I was there. I worked in the massage department. And I'm a bit of a chef, a bit of a cook. And the very first time that I cooked in a professional kitchen was with Deepak Chopra in his center. Funny thing is, the very first person to record me in the world was Deepak Chopra. And I don't know. He's obviously a very spiritual, in a way, mystical person, but and a very kind person. But he invited Rosa Parks, great civil rights icon, Rosa Parks,
of course,
to give a speech at the Chopra Center. And I was so low on the totem pole, didn't have a music career, was just finished college, I was a nobody. But in a way, Rosa Parks walked through the front doors of the Chopra Center, and I felt like just her being there elevated my status. It elevated me. And I had never had really the guts to, you know, like I said, I was just a person who was doing small jobs at the Chopra Center. I was always nervous and scared to talk to Deepak and to talk to any of the people who were higher ups in that organization. But when Rosa Parks stepped through the front doors and I saw her before she, you know, she had a full day there. After seeing her, I got the confidence to go to Deepak and say, before Miss Parks speaks, I would love to sing a song for her. I was one of the only Black people who were working at the center at that time. So I got the opportunity to talk to Rosa Parks and ask her what her favorite song was. And it happened to be my mother's favorite song. So, right. So it was an amazing, amazing experience. So I sang to this national treasure, civil rights icon, my mother's favorite song. Her speech and my song went so well that Deepak says, we have to make a record of this. We have to make a CD of this and put it out into the world. And I agreed to it. But it was my very first utterance on a record is with Deepak, Rosa Parks, and Gregory Porter. Yeah. I don't know if you can find it anymore.
Wow, what a story to tell.
Yeah, yes.
Way to win at life, Gregory. Who could top that story? My first.
And he made everything wonderful. But
oh, how amazing.
Thank you so much. It was really awesome to get, you know, these, you know, just bits of wisdom from these people that we watch every day and love. And, you know, I just give me something from your life of great success that can help other people get over that little self-doubt and insecurity about whatever it is that they have. And I know with the book and with the movie and just being who you are, you're talking to people all the time, every day. So I really appreciate you giving me this time and in your very busy schedule. I really do. Thank you so much.
Of course. Thank you so much. But I love your question because I think sometimes it happens that people see, you know, a long upward trajectory for a very long time in people's careers. And you think that, oh, wow, look at this person, you know, sitting at the top of the mountain. And like, that's not, you're never always on the top of the mountain. You have to have started somewhere. It's an uphill climb and it's full of many, many failures. And that's okay. Yeah. I think the one thing that I tell a lot of young people when they're starting out is, you know, we hold ourselves back so much because we're afraid of what would be on the other side. Because if I fail at the thing that I'm trying, I'm going to be a failure forever. But that's an untrue narrative. That is not true. It's about making movements. It's about taking the first step, slowly another step, then the third one. And slowly you look behind and you'll have a 20-year career.
Yeah.
Even though you may have misstepped sometimes, tripped sometimes, fallen, dust yourself off and take another step. Just keep moving forward is so important.
Blessings. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. You are already an extraordinary artist and your work is unfinished. You have much, much more to do, and I'm very much looking forward to it. And I thank you. Thank you so much for hanging out with me here on The Hang.
Thank you so much for having me and for our mutual fires that, you know, make me feel like we're in the same room.
Right.
And there we go. Still so much more to discover about Priyanka. And I look forward to hearing her sing a ballad one day when the time is right. Thank you so much, Priyanka. And as always, my friends, thank you for popping by. Until next time, I'm Gregory Porter, and this has been a Cup and Nuzzle production.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.